Do something a little different today. I'm going to ask Chris Ramsey to come forward. This is Ascending Sunday, and on the fourth Sundays of the month, our church does something a little bit different. We don't have adult education classes or youth education classes. We generally get together and do missional activities. And one of the things you'll be able to do this afternoon is to participate in Lunches on the Square, which is a opportunity for you to make some sack lunches for about 400. How many are we doing now? 450? About 450 lunches for people. You'll also have the opportunity to talk to Chris Ramsey a little bit. And I'm going to ask Chris if you would come forward. You got a mic there? Good. Chris? Chris is the entrepreneur, proprietor of the Sparta Restaurant and Grill in Newark. But many of you know Chris's story that before doing this restaurant endeavor, he was the interim director for Bridges Out of Poverty here in Licking County and has done a lot of work with trying to help people move from poverty to self-sufficiency. And in this political campaign, we've heard a lot about success and the successful people. And I thought it'd be interesting today, instead of me having a regular kind of a sermon, to invite Chris up here and to have us just talk a little bit about success and about what that means in his experience and how he's worked with people trying to figure out what that means in their own lives, what that means for our endeavors as we try to participate in God's work in creating a world of shalom. And so maybe first of all, before we start, I'm just interested, people might like to know if there's anything new going on at the Sparta, anything that you'd like to share about things that might be happening with your initiatives in and around the Sparta there.
For those of you who are not familiar with what we're doing, the Sparta is a social entrepreneur enterprise. And if that's new language for you, let me try to sum that up in 0.3 seconds or less. Social entrepreneurism is about businesses with a cause and a purpose, and it's a way of giving back to community and to the globe. And in our case, the Sparta came birthed out of, I think this is kind of the accumulation of a lifetime of my background and looking for ways to make a difference and doing everything from higher education to working actually in ministry for a while, although that may shock some of you. That's another story, and I promised Dwight I wouldn't tell it. It's best for the children if we don't tell that story. But having spent some time, a lot of time inside the church and growing up in a very similar environment that Dwight did, in fundamentalism, and this is the right way, the only way, and this is the only way to think, is that when I started to travel around the world, that grew just naturally, and it began to expand. And so as my worldview changed, I started asking the question again how I could make a difference, and that included places like Haiti and South Africa and China, and then most recently in the last 20 years where I was working both in the entertainment industry and then working developing nonprofits in Los Angeles, specifically for cancer survivors and cancer warriors. But coming here to Newark and asking the question of what can we do to alleviate poverty, is the core of how I understand what Jesus is all about. Is that simple message of true religion that is pure and undefiled as this, is to take care of the orphans and the widows. And to the translation that I remember was keep yourself from being defiled by the world. But for me, that means to keep myself from buying into a system that isn't based on love. And that's how I understand who God is. So social entrepreneurism was my own personal desire to try to understand how development happens in rural communities, community development, and how we could make a difference. So we started the Sparta, which is a job training program, as well as a social entrepreneur efforts. There's a nonprofit dimension of that. And this is when it all starts to get murky, doesn't it? Right? It's like people go, whoa. But it includes our latest endeavors of we are participating in the Roots of Success program, and where we are training up and selecting right now. We've already got our first person in the mix, raising up a half a dozen probably to start people who will participate in the program and become green contractors here in Newark and in Licking County. These are people in poverty or with economic barriers or different barriers in their life, and so we're participating in that. So most recently, the most recent endeavors, we are putting a bid in on 17 multi-unit houses in Newark that need to be developed. And we are going to be developing these as part of our laboratory for the Green Job Training, which is very exciting. So we're going to be teaching folks to be contractors, both men and women. And they'll be going in and renovating these houses, and half of these houses will then become transitional housing for folks who are in serious need. That becomes people, that's people from the reentry program, folks coming out of prison or jail, including people who are in crisis, because there's a serious need in our community for transitional housing. And then the other half, we will be selling as affordable housing for people in our community. So rather than spending $800 a month to rent an unsafe house, they'll be able to eventually purchase the houses and pay rents of $200 or $300 a month. So we're putting, you know, $5,000 to $6,000 a year liquid into the hands of people in poverty, and that changes lives. We're also participating closely with people from all across the community, and we're collaborating. And we are putting in a bid to buy the old Newark High School, which they were going to tear down. And it's a great story, and I won't tell it today. But they were going to tear it down, and someone overheard a conversation in the Sparta that we were having, because that's part of what we're trying to do as a third place, a place where we can have conversation about changing the community. And a bunch of people went to the school board and said there's a better solution, and so they rescinded their vote to demolish a historic building, and we are putting a proposal together right now to purchase that and to turn it into affordable, cool studio units, create an artist loft and an artist community, as well as keeping the gymnasium open for the community. So that's what happened this week.
Cool.
We've talked a lot about this church over the summer, about kind of the difficulty, because we've got a lot of people in the congregation who are involved in initiatives on behalf of other people to help connect them, to get them involved, to help make the world a better place. People doing that in schools, people doing that in, you know, through religious institutions, people doing that through community organizing. You're doing it through an initiative like the Sparta and getting people together that way. But we've talked this summer about the us-them problem a lot, about how people tend to divide the world up into the them and the us, and you probably, many of you know that happens a lot in charity work. We're giving our charity to them. And so I was just interested to know how you think about this whole issue and how you process getting around that us-them divide in what you do.
If there were three useful things they taught me when I was in my undergraduate education, which was at a religious or faith-based school, and these three principles were. I mean, I'm just deeply, there weren't all just three things, Dwight. There were several things. Okay.
You still got a little preacher in you. It all has to do with threes, right?
It's all about threes. That's right. And because, you know, part of this, too, is we're talking about new concepts and branding, and people remember threes. And but the first thing that we taught was, and this was in a long time ago, was the integration, to integrate faith and learning. That my faith should be integrated in with how I understand how the world works. And when we talk about this concept of class and distinction and poverty, I have to tell you the truth, that 30 years of working in nonprofits and working in faith-based institutions, probably about 90% of what I did was absolutely useless and had no impact at all. Although I was very, very busy doing it. And that includes trying to get people to think the way that I think and to act the way that I acted, and I had an agenda when I talked to folks. And all of you who come from those conservative, close-minded ranks, you know what I'm talking about. So as my world expanded, the first truth for me about what it means to love God was that I also had to love my fellow man. And that didn't mean changing them. And to see myself as one, that I love the words of the Dalai Lama when he says, we have more in common than we do apart. And that affects the way that I deal with people in my community. And I had to recognize how deeply entrenched in class I was. And that's a person coming from poverty. Because looking back on it, everything that about my life coming out of poverty, I looked at as bad and wanted to change. That I didn't have a vocabulary to express what I wanted to say. And so I worked hard at trying to develop that. And I had never eaten in nice restaurants, so I quickly learned that. And I dove into middle upper class, you know, like I was diving into a swimming pool and didn't look back. And while I was in Los Angeles, I was convinced I lived an accepting and a loving and an inclusive life, that I loved everybody. But what I didn't realize is that I had a real problem with conservatives and bigots. And I'm not saying that coming to Newark, I was exposed to conservatives and to bigots. But what I am saying was that I was faced very deeply with the division I had with my political beliefs. And what other people believed had put a wall up between us. And so part of the work that we've done at the Sparta has been a personal work for me of learning to accept and love people and to stand on common ground and to have a conversation that isn't about class or race or political ideology, but to have a class about what it means to be a conversation to what it means to be human and to care and to make a difference, to live a life of compassion, to live a life that makes a difference. And so that has been the root of what we have talked about. And abolishing class and looking honestly in the face of how I viewed poverty was very much what it was like for me the first time I looked into the mirror and realized that there, although I felt like I loved everybody of every color, that there were elements of racism and bigotry and sexism and homophobia. And the first time I had that look in the mirror and I went, oh my God, there's no way I can live this. I need to integrate my faith with my learning. And we've tried to do that at the Sparta. And When I was talking to a group of Denison kids on Friday night, 30 of them, and when I said, when you see the face of poverty, what do you see? And they described it for me. It's white, it's stupid, drunk, dirty, and unattractive. Now, they didn't say it in those many words, but where I come from, the face of poverty is black and scary and separate and angry, and that's what people will talk about. But in a community, the beauty of a small community, Dwight, is that if I set aside that agenda and if I do the work on myself to love and to accept other folks, then that becomes the unspoken conversation that I'm having with everybody that we meet every single day. And looking at people through the eyes of God, for me, means seeing their potential and to recognize first the biases that we have. And my personal opinion is part of the reason why the white upper class church has not truly participated in relationship with people in the community has a lot to do with those biases that have never been spoken, because nobody wants to say that. Nobody wants to say, I'm a bigot. You know, I don't like stupid people. And those are terrible labels, I understand. But the minute that we recognize where the barriers are, then we can work to dissolve them. And that's what we're trying to do.
As I was in the Sparta this week, I was talking with you, we were having some coffee, and in walked a person who was working on solar energy with you in one way or another, and just came up to the table, and he'd been doing some work with Denison. He was working with you about how he might connect to the high school project, and I was kind of standing there in awe, realizing that the place, the restaurant, the Sparta restaurant isn't really just a restaurant, is it?
No.
It's like something else. Talk about that for a minute.
I think that social change doesn't have to happen inside the walls of a church or inside the walls of a nonprofit. In fact, in small communities, my own personal understanding, and there are always exceptions to this, is that a silo can isolate you from the good that's happening in the community. And that there's been a real freedom for me in not seeing what we're doing at the Sparta as filling any single job description, that we see it as an open effort to make a difference in the community. And so, and what we've created is has a lot to do with organizational behavior and organizational health, that you can set the tone of an environment and then draw like-minded people to that place. And that's what we're trying to do at the Sparta. And so we have all these conversations. And that for me, you know, the poverty alleviation isn't just about teaching a Bridges Out of Poverty class or even teaching a Roots of Success class, but it's about participating in relationship with people in my community. And as we build these relationships, that's where the magic happens. And I think that this is what used to happen in the church 100 years ago, when the church was the center of the community. People had their home, they had their work, and then the church was the third place. Well, in the 21st century, there's a lack of places to go in communities where everybody can just hang out and have conversations. And we're trying to create that sort of a place there. And it is intangible, it's magical, because every single day something wonderful happens because of the preparation of what folks are. It's kind of cool. It really is. It's kind of cool.
Just thinking about the Bible passage today of Jesus telling the people who are listening to him, you know, don't pay too much attention to the Pharisees, their authorities. They're trying to tell us all how to fix the world. Don't do what they're doing. If you want to have honor, honor other people. Mm-hmm. Right? If you want to be a leader, humble yourself. And I get the sense that this third place idea has a lot to do with creating sort of relationships that are on the same level with people. You come to a place where, you know, the clergy take their hats off, the social organizers take their, you know, labels off their jackets, and you're just there among other people. You're not Dr. So-and-so or Reverend So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. You're just, you know, Chris.
I think that's pretty accurate. We have judges that come in here and have coffee in the morning, and it's the first time that they're meeting people outside their courtroom, right? Really meeting folks.
Interesting.
And the ministers in our community are coming in, and they're not doing the reverend thing. They are. They're just hanging out with folks. And interestingly enough, our social service people who are overworked and who are frustrated and are often in dysfunctional systems are coming in and hanging out at the Sparta and just talking to people. And what the change for me has been, having done service as a job or getting paid for it, and I'm so privileged to be able to do what we're doing today. The difference is that it's hard work. Don't get me wrong, right? I mean, oh my God, just come to the Sparta on a given day and watch the fires happen. I mean, not literally, but, you know, it can get a little scary in there. You know, and we had 15 people from the Presbyterian Church across the street come on Saturday because they heard what we were doing, and they wanted to support our program, wanted to know how to get involved. And so they're voting this week on whether they're going to be a Coffee for Causes church. Well, they'll order coffee subscriptions and support the program. But while they came in, and I'm trying to make a good impression, our cook, who is probably a diabetic, but he doesn't have a health card, so we can't really get him in the hospital, passed out in the middle of the meal, and they didn't tell me. And I'm standing at their table wondering, I wonder why the food isn't coming in. And I walk in the back, and he's sitting in a chair, you know, doing this number, and Fatina's trying to cook, and everybody's got that deer in the headlights look, you know. And in Ohio, you know, that's lethal. And so there we are, but it's magical that this isn't the same kind of labor that it used to be for me, that there's something, I think it's synchronicity, I think it's serendipity, and it's completely different than what I've had. So when I tell people, come to the Sparta, build a relationship, hang out with us, then you'll see what it's all about. You know, ask the Burkitts what this is about, or Dwight who comes down here, or, you know, Jerry Griffin and the other folks from the church. You guys have come down and participated in this, and you get a chance to have a conversation and to see the magic happen. It's really wonderful. And this is what I used to struggle with. I had a professor who asked, Oh, I used to ask why he didn't talk more about his faith. And he said, because when I talk about what's sacred for me, I make it secular. And there's a lack of a translation. I'm trying to describe in words something that for me is very holy. And the giving that we do there, I like that word of what Jesus encouraged, or the Old Testament prophet actually encouraged. He said, you know, when you give, don't let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. And when I talk about this, it doesn't carry the same value as when you participate in it. You know, Deb's encounter with Princessa, who's the daughter of our director, and, you know, and these amazing conversations that happen, it's magic. And for me, it's sacred. And I wish you, all of you had the opportunity to have as much fun as I'm having doing all of this, because it is fun.
So one question before we close down here is, what do you think it means to be a success? For you, what does that mean?
For me, it means to be honest, open, and willing. That my success is about being the authentic person that I am, or trying to be. And it's ironic. I spent years of my life trying to be somebody else, right? And traveling with the rich and famous, and feeling that I wasn't good enough or holy enough, and trying to be a better person. And the beautiful thing about growing older is that it's possible to let go of all of that stuff. And for me, success, first of all, means being authentic and being myself. And that's why I'm grateful for a community of people. Because after my initial experience in the church, I was pretty sure I would never set foot in a place like this again. I think that's what they were hoping as well. But in fact, for a period of time, when I was working as a trainer, celebrity trainer, traveling around, I never told anybody about my former life. And here I am, you know, this shaved head goateed, you know, back then hulking guy, you know, trouncing around the country doing bodyguard work. And people just assumed I'd been in prison. And I was much more comfortable with that than them knowing that I was a minister. And success for me, the second part of that is about really participating in community again. And I didn't know what I'd been missing all those years. And as long as I was trying to be somebody else or building up the walls, I wasn't being authentic. And this is the place where healing takes place for me. And that, for me, is a success. And I think hooking up and becoming collaborative in a community and participating in the magic, and it doesn't matter what the outcome is, that I don't have this need to produce a certain amount of whatever anymore. And it's, oh my God, you know, I wish I could have learned this 30 years ago. You know, think of the time I could have saved. And the money, not to mention that. But I want to say, if I can, there is a poem by Maya Angelou that I think that talks about what success means for me. And if you'll let me read this. Dwight, would you read that?
Yeah.
This is Maya Angelou, Still I Rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies, and you may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Because I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides, and just like hopes springing high, still I'll rise. Did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awfully hard, because I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness, but still like air, I'll rise. Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from the past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean leaping and wide, welling and swelling. I bear in the tide, leaving behind nights of terror and fear. I rise. Into a daybreak that's wonderfully clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise, I rise, I rise.
Amen. Thanks for being here, brother.
Thanks, brother.
We appreciate it.
If you want to know more about how you can be involved in the Sparta, Chris is going to be here after church. So while you're making sandwiches, come up and ask Chris how you can be involved in this initiative and the things happening around the Sparta restaurant in Newark.